Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to Education Talk Radio. We are just thrilled to have you here today, our second show. Today, here on October 28th, 2011. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We do. I'm Larry Jacobs, your host, as always, and I always like to tell people that this show will be archived immediately as soon as we're done at www.education-talkradio.org, education-talkradio.org. Over there is our website. Our complete schedule is over there for the week, actually for the whole year. If you click on the top link to the right, and you'll see all our archive shows there as well. Go over and listen to any that may interest you. Pass it around to your friends. There's all kinds of educational news over there, upcoming events, news on products and services. And this show will be there shortly after we're finished, about 45 minutes from now. I have with us today a wonderful guest, and I want to thank my good friends at Heinemann Publishing for introducing me to Linda Hoyt. Linda, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Larry.
How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much. The sun is shining. The leaves are crispy and turning color. It's a good day.
And let's tell people where you are. I am right outside of Boston, Massachusetts, and you are?
I'm in Oregon.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm actually in the central Oregon area. I'm in a wonderful mountainous region that is famous for having 300 days of sunshine a year. And clear, crispy, cold days like today.
Exactly. And yesterday when we talked as we were preparing the show, I think a little earlier in the day for Linda, and I said, what's the temperature, knowing she was in Oregon? And I was expecting her to say 75 degrees, and she said 17 degrees. And I asked her, could you repeat that, please? But again,
the day starts
cold. Yeah, good.
Well, our elevation's pretty high here. We're at about 4,500 feet of elevation.
Wow.
So that's where we pick up that wonderful mountainous air, but we get the blue sky to go with it. So that works.
Wow. What a perfect place. May I say the name of the town?
Yes, it's Bend, Oregon.
Bend, Oregon. And I believe, if my history is right, isn't that at sort of the bend of the rivers of the Willamette there?
Well, actually, the Willamette River runs through the western part of Oregon. It runs right through the middle of Portland in the Willamette Valley. We're quite a bit further east, and the Deschutes River runs through there, and that's where the name Bend came from, because it's a very famous bend in the Deschutes River.
Right, and actually, I thought it was the Willamette. Thank you for clearing that up. But I went on Google Earth yesterday and looked and saw the geography of Bend. It really is a beautiful place. You picked a good place. And just so you, this will make you feel even better before we get on with the show, Lynn. We're expecting 6 to 10 inches of snow tomorrow.
Are you really? Wow.
Yeah, it's a freak nor'easter. Temperatures dropping the whole East Coast. So if you're planning to come east, don't bother.
Okay. Thanks for the warning.
You're welcome, and enjoy your sunny day, which I'm sure will be absolutely gorgeous. Linda Hoyt is a teacher, a staff developer, a curriculum specialist, an author for Heinemann Publishing, which, by the way, is located in another beautiful town, Portsmouth, New Hampshire. You can learn more about her books at Heinemann, H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N, Heinemann.com. There's also Linda Hoyt, LindaHoyt.com. You can go onto Linda's website or email her at linda@lindahoyt.com. And we're going to be talking about, and I thank you for picking this topic, Linda, a very interesting topic, nonfiction writing in elementary classrooms and how that works with the Common Core State Standards. And the whole idea of nonfiction writing in elementary school is pretty unusual, isn't it, Linda?
Well, I think it used to be. I think we came through a long history in American education of believing that kids needed story as their first introduction to print. But in reality, we know that kids are naturally curious about the world. So what's beginning to happen is this awakening awareness of how exciting nonfiction reading and writing can be for even the youngest children.
Well, you're an expert in this. You are a literacy expert, you're a nonfiction, you're a creative genius there in the field of education. Why is it so important for kids to become confident readers and confident writers of nonfiction texts? And I love the fact nonfiction reading as well as writing.
Yeah, absolutely. They certainly do go hand in hand. But I think the most important thing is that we're finally stopping and really noticing that nonfiction texts do fill the world. They're everywhere around us. There's newspapers, magazines, directions, street signs, emails. I mean, if you think about it, our lives are just inundated with all kinds of nonfiction text types. And as we move up through schooling and into adulthood, it doesn't go away. No matter what your profession, there's nonfiction text that surrounds us. So with that awareness, bringing nonfiction instruction down for reading and writing into the very earliest stages of literacy learning make really, really good sense.
You know, I have to tell you, you just said something that struck me so interesting, was street signs. I never realized, of course, you have to read a street sign.
Or how about the Starbucks menu in the morning?
In its simplest form, that's nonfiction writing, reading.
Yes, it is, all of it.
Wow, that's just amazing. Do teachers like to teach nonfiction?
I think they're catching on to the fact that it's very exciting. For a long time, I think teachers weren't always led to believe that it was accessible to young children, but the quality of the resources.
Like me just now.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of it is just stopping and thinking about it and making it, you know, something that is a conscious and deliberate thought. Teachers get it really quickly. And I think for a long time we were misled to believe that they had to already know how to read before they could enter nonfiction. And that's not true at all.
How old do you think? And I'm a secondary school teacher, so I was a secondary school teacher. So I was trained subject-wise as opposed to child-wise, for lack of a better way to put that. When do you think that a kid can actually begin to engage in nonfiction reading and writing?
Okay, I have to ask you a question. Have you ever been around a preschooler when there's a McDonald's around?
Yes, I have.
And I think that's something we all know, is they pick up that environmental print, which is nonfiction reading, very, very quickly and naturally.
Wow. So let me ask you, is there any controversy regarding this?
I think at one time there were people who thought that this was not developmentally appropriate, but we're pretty well past that now. We know that, in fact, if you look at the way learning occurs, is that fiction is very abstract. I mean, if you talk about three little pigs walking around in clothing, that's not something you see on the street every day. But if you talk
maybe
about
not
a worm,
then, but we see it here all the time in the Swampscott, for goodness sake.
Who knows?
Now.
But if you think about real things, kids are fascinated by butterflies, by caterpillars, by the things that they can see and they can touch, and how natural then to get to read and write about what they see, what they experience in their world.
But my wife did most of the reading to the kids when they were young. They're adults now. But I'm just going to remember a book that she used to read to them called, like, The Very Hungry Caterpillar.
Everybody
knows that book. Right? Now, is that fiction or nonfiction?
It's fiction.
Yeah,
because
fiction.
It has the caterpillar eating pickles and things that really aren't natural to a caterpillar.
Well, maybe not. No, I'm only kidding, for goodness sake. This is really cool. So would you recommend, I have to ask this, would you recommend, okay, that certainly nobody's anti The Very Hungry Caterpillar. Are you anti The Very Hungry Caterpillar?
Absolutely not. I love that book. But what I'd absolutely want to do is to marry it to a book with real facts about a caterpillar so kids
get
to see it from both sides.
Exactly. That's what I was just thinking. What a perfect world.
Mm-hmm. It is. It builds background knowledge. It helps kids learn to be critical thinkers. It has a lot of benefit.
Oh, this is really fascinating stuff. Are you the guru? Are you the guru of nonfiction?
Oh, I would hesitate to say that, but I can say I'm very passionate about it.
I can hear that, and I bet you are one of the gurus of it. So talk to me then about the Common Core State Standards, which is all the rage these days. And they've drawn significant attention, as we talked about, to nonfiction literacy. So tell me a bit about that.
Well, it's exciting that the Common Core Standards have positioned reading and writing instruction very firmly in the content areas, looking at science, social studies, health, and mathematics as critical areas where kids need reading instruction. It's really good news overall because we know from research that reading development is content specific. That means that just being a reader of fiction does not necessarily mean you're going to be a great reader of a science text or a social studies text or a mathematics text. You need instruction in each of those different kinds of text types because they function differently. And the text, even the sentences.
Explain what you mean when you say they function differently.
Even the sentences are different.
Please.
In a piece of fiction, as an example, there's lots and lots of language woven together to create a storyline that unfolds gradually. So kids have time to figure out what's going on because there are lots and lots of words wrapped around the ideas. When you move to a science text or a mathematics text, all of a sudden the extra words are stripped away. The sentences are short, concepts come at them fast and furious, and there's no extra time to figure it out. So kids have to read it differently. You slow it down. You take time to think about the significance of subject-specific vocabulary. There's a lot more that has to happen as a kid digests every sentence in a nonfiction text.
Well, this is amazing. Let me reintroduce you for those who just tuned in. Linda Hoyt, my wonderful guest today, is a teacher and staff developer, curriculum specialist in her spare time, and she's also an author for Heinemann Publishing, which is based in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, beautiful Portsmouth, New Hampshire, I might add, who introduced me to her. Thank you again, Charles, for doing that. You can learn more at Heinemann, HEINEMANN.com. Do you think... And Linda, we're always talking about how the U.S. is falling behind, and you know, you certainly know what STEM is, that acronym. We're falling behind in science and mathematics. Do you think that part of the reason for that is because the kids were taught more to read fiction at the beginning than nonfiction? Could there be a cause and effect there? Or can we improve it? Let me put it the other way. Can we improve it by teaching them more nonfiction?
I would argue you're absolutely right, Larry. I think we can improve it. I think by building more world knowledge, by helping kids learn about the world while they're learning to read, we tend to gain in a lot of different angles. I think the other thing we tend to gain is the Common Core standards are leading kids toward critical thinking, wanting kids to think beyond what's stated on the page and analyze, to evaluate, to move into a position of taking a powerful stance as a thinker. That's good. That's an exciting place for kids to be.
Then how does it affect? Right, so reading's one thing, but what about writing? How does Common Core impact writing in elementary?
Well,
can the kids I want to say this the right way? Can they write from a nonfiction point, or how would that work?
Oh, in lots of different ways. The Common Core is asking that kids have two very distinct focus points for their writing. Number one is they need to be writing in every subject area every day. So if a primary teacher does a read aloud, hopefully right after that read aloud, the kids will have a clipboard and they're going to be making a list of attributes of a character who is in the story. In a mathematics classroom, you might see kids finding a thinking partner, and after solving a math problem, they write a letter to each other saying, "Dear partner, here's how I solved this problem. How did you solve it?" So they begin to use writing all day long throughout the disciplines. That really is an exciting place. And then in addition to that, what the Common Core is asking is that kids also get in-depth experiences where they take a topic and they go deep. And they might be studying, for example, the life cycle of a butterfly or the history of the Civil War, but they go deep instead of just surface level, and they take time. So they may be working on a project for a couple of weeks, maybe even a month.
This is fascinating, Linda Hoyt. This is really fascinating. I have to ask you a question. You and I talked about this briefly yesterday. Middle schools. Middle schools, in some places, I guess they start in fifth grade, others sixth, others seventh, maybe even somewhere fourth grade or something like that. But perhaps there's a place where the kids leave elementary school, and we'll call that middle school, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Can kids – I want to ask two questions – I would like to know that kids can pick up this idea of nonfiction writing, not just from the time that they begin to learn reading and writing, but can pick it up at some future date if it wasn't taught when they were there, so to speak. And would middle school teachers understand this? And how does it impact the lower middle school is the best way I can say that.
Sure. I think they absolutely do understand this. I think we have a long history, you know, in education of expecting kids to take notes, expecting kids to write summaries, expecting kids to use writing as a tool for thinking and learning and expressing themselves. So I think middle school teachers and high school teachers really do get this. I think what's going to be different now is that there are many text types that they're going to need to begin introducing their kids to across the disciplines. The kids need to, in the Common Core, be writing arguments and opinions. They need to write descriptions and explanations. they need to write narration as well, not only personal narrative of, you know, when I blew out the candles on my birthday cake, but an informational narrative as well that is full of facts but written in a story-like manner. There's lots of different types of writing that I think these intermediate school teachers, middle school teachers, and high school teachers are going to really enjoy working on with their kids.
I think this is a wonderful thing. Are the teachers, and I'll swing back to elementary now, are the teachers in being trained to be elementary school teachers, do the teacher training institutes, where do they stand on nonfiction writing and the use of nonfiction reading and writing in the earlier grades?
Well, it's a really good point. I think there's as much variability in the teacher training institutes across this country, you know, as there are institutions. I don't know that I could speak to what is a norm. But what I can say is...
Well, generically, you sort of pick up scuttlebutt, that sort of stuff.
Sure. Well, I'll use the California Reading Association as an example. They're having their conference this weekend. And the whole focus of the conference is looking at nonfiction literacy.
Wow.
They're looking at reading and writing from kindergarten through grade 12. And it's a very, I think, contemporary focus. It's great.
It is absolutely fascinating. But so that's the California Reading Association, but we're still not sure, although I guess maybe we can extrapolate down, that people who are teaching teachers to teach reading and writing, okay, are getting into the nonfiction thing.
Well, I think the Common Core is going to make it essential. With the Common Core requiring this now, I think it's going to become the norm very soon as people are beginning to understand how deeply important this is.
How'd you get involved in this? What made this such a passion for you?
Well, I think several things. One is I was a teacher for a long time, and there were a lot of kids that I saw learning to become proficient and strategic readers of fiction, and then you'd pass out a nonfiction resource and you'd watch those kids simply wilt.
They just deflate.
I wanted to fix that. Exactly, deflate. I wanted to fix it, and so I started looking more deeply into the learning that was needed for me to get better at teaching content literacy for reading and for writing. And I realized I was part of the problem. I didn't have a lot of confidence with it. And so it was harder for me to be a great commercial to kids about nonfiction reading when I didn't necessarily have passion for it myself. So I had to go out and find that passion. I had to learn about nonfiction while I was doing it.
And how did you do that?
I actually started by taking the opportunity to read more nonfiction, go out and search for the best possible mentors out in the field. I mean, I went and looked for mentors like Seymour Simon, who's, you know, the world-famous author of more than 250 scientific titles for children. People like that can't – when you read their work, you realize this is exciting. This isn't boring. So a lot of it is finding great books.
Well, you know, I got to tell you something, just a little piece from from many, many years ago when I was in seventh grade, okay? But I loved fiction, and I wound up being a history teacher, but I loved science at that point. And I remember my science teacher gave us a term paper or something like that in seventh grade, probably three pages long, and they assigned to me the salmon, the fish, the salmon,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And now, what do I know from salmon? Out where you are, there people have pet salmon. They walk in the street. They live in cages. They fly overhead. But in Philadelphia, we only had the smoked salmon in the form of lox. So I read about the salmon, and I remember in seventh grade, I think I read it three times. I had never heard of spawning before. And that salmon go back, obviously, to the place where they are born to lay their eggs and die. Okay, but I didn't know that. And I remember being absolutely fascinated by it. And that was really the first chunk of, I'll say forced, so to speak, educational nonfiction. But it opened my eyes to this incredible world that's going on biologically. You know, and I wish somebody had given it to me when I was younger. But this was seventh grade.
And it's a shame that you had to discover that for yourself. Because now what we're going to have with the Common Core is research is required beginning in kindergarten for kids to get a researcher mentality. So instead of just noticing, the leaves are turning color, kids are going to be expected to use a magnifying glass and look closely at the vein structure of the leaf, tuning up their powers of observation, and we're going to call them researchers. Researchers, as you look at these leaves, what facts can you extract? So they get this research mentality from the beginning, and they're going to have that awareness that you unfortunately didn't acquire until seventh grade. Seymour Simon, I had just mentioned, I've got a copy of one of his books right in front of me, and I think it's a premier example of why the great books that we can bring to children can make a difference. He has a book called The Sun. And if you'll take your fingers and make a circle with your thumb and your index finger about the size of a golf ball and hold that up.
Yep.
Here's his page one. The sun is huge compared to Earth. If the sun were hollow, it would hold 1.3 million Earths. Think of this. If the Earth were the size of a golf ball, then the sun would be a globe about 15 feet across.
Wow.
To me, that's magical. Because you can hold your finger up and imagine a globe 15 feet across. Oh, good.
I was doing that.
And I think when we can bring that kind of learning to kids where they become involved, they can visualize, they can engage in sensory understanding, it's going to help make nonfiction come so much more brightly into their world.
How do you see it fitting in? And I'm going to, and I think you already said this, but I just want to be sure, because elementary school teachers, bless their sweet hearts, have to teach every subject.
Yes.
Okay, and believe me, they try, but nobody's an expert in every subject. Nobody's a jack of all trades in every single subject, science, math, everything you could think of. How do you see this fitting in to a given, let's say, elementary curriculum?
Actually, I see it fitting in really naturally. As an example, persuasion and argument are the number one text type in the Common Core. I have a piece here in front of me by a little lady named Elania, who's a third grader. She was doing independent reading, and the teacher said, after independent reading today, your job is to write a little note that's a persuasion to get somebody else to read the book you just read. So here's what she wrote. She said, it's time to give up books that make you yawn. Set aside the boring in the week. Wake up and meet Seymour Simon.
She wrote that?
She wrote that. Tucked it inside the book and went and gave it to a friend.
How old is that child?
It's third grade.
She's writing ad copy. She's third grade.
You got it. That's a persuasion. That is absolute Common Core thinking and writing, because she's analyzing, she's inviting, she's persuading. And I think teachers are going to find that it fits really, really naturally. Some of the things that they're going to have to add to their thinking, though, to make this work well for kids is to add modeling. Modeled writing is a real essential part of becoming successful with nonfiction writing, because kids need to see as a teacher constructs the text. They need to listen to the teacher think out loud about, wow, here's a fact I can put in, but I'm going to try two or three ways to construct this sentence and see which one sounds the best. Watch as I do that. So it's a think out loud, demonstrate kind of experience that enables kids to reach higher as a nonfiction writer. Very different than saying, okay, go now, you have some facts, go write. There's no model then for them to follow. Mentors and modeling together. It is exciting, but what it is getting the teachers to realize they've got to stop and take time to pick up the pen and write in front of the kids. I have a friend who once said, you should never ask kids to do something they haven't seen you do first. And I love that line.
It's a great line. And I actually, that line pervades almost any type of occupation you have. You don't ask people to do something that you can't do yourself.
Good point.
You know, it's the old story about a sales manager, you know, who tells somebody you got to sell $1 million worth, and he only sells $100 worth. It's easy to tell people to do something, but you got to show them how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is great stuff. You are working on going to go two ways here. You're working on a new nonfiction writing project, okay, with a co-author named Tony Stead or Stead, which is
it? It's Stead, yes.
Mm-hmm. Tony Stead. Is that a male or a female, Tony?
Male.
That's a male, Tony. Okay. Mm-hmm. And also, you have a book, which I want people to be very aware of, which is entitled Crafting Nonfiction.
Correct.
Okay. So I want to know, first of all, what you mean by crafting and how the crafting impacts creative writing and nonfiction writing. And also, then I want to know how that works with the new nonfiction writing project and what that is.
Okay. Heinemann
actually
has...
Was that too big a question, Linda? Was that too big a question?
Well, you can help me break it down.
Okay.
Heinemann has actually a suite of resources that are focused on supporting nonfiction writing. There's Explorations in Nonfiction Writing, which is the project I'm doing with Tony Stead from Melbourne, Australia. And that's grade-level specific supports that are designed to be a full-blown curriculum, if you will, that would help teachers implement high-quality nonfiction writing. There's videos that go with it, and then there is the crafting nonfiction book that you just mentioned that focuses on making nonfiction writing be better than a dictionary. It's the idea that when we give kids some support in creating more interesting, lively writing, that their writing is fascinating to readers, and they feel better about what they've produced. So instead of a kid saying, "Eagles have good vision, eagles fly fast," instead they might write, "With ice-picked talons tucked under his chin, the eagle begins his plunge." That's a sentence that's crafted to build sensory imaging. That's what we want to go for in crafting nonfiction, is support to higher quality construction of really rich language.
And how soon, and I know it would be leveled, but how soon can a child craft a sentence like that at their level? I don't know how to ask that question properly. You can help me.
Sure. In kindergarten. They can start really, really early to learn that when you write, you don't write, "Eagles have good vision, eagles fly fast, eagles have feathers." Those kinds of sentences are really, really boring, and little kids even can figure that out fast and learn. It's really helpful when you start each sentence with a different word. We can make it really, really accessible to the very youngest children. And we can engage them in making it fun, too. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I have to ask, because you brought it up before. Let's just take McDonald's as an example, because kids like to go to McDonald's, Happy Meals, all that sort of stuff. Okay? By the way, I'm not advocating McDonald's. I'm using them as an example. But does a company like McDonald's or Mattel or whoever the case may be understand that kids will be more excited by more crafted, well-crafted writing? Is education lagging behind advertising, basically, is what I'm asking?
Oh, it's a good question, Larry. I find that a fascinating, thought. I'd never considered it before, but if you think how well-crafted advertising is, maybe there's a lot to be learned from that, especially with
the notion
of persuasion.
They seem to have figured out something.
Mm-hmm.
And now, with the help of authors like you, with the help of authors like you, kids will be able, this is another key thing, to discern between good and bad a lot easier. If they can write good and bad, so to speak, and descriptive, they'll be able to understand it better.
Absolutely.
That's really interesting point I just made, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Well done.
Thank you.
But I have a gift for you, Larry. I was in a classroom in Ohio last week. I was working with kindergarten and first grade students, and I told them that I was going to be doing this chat with you. And so they prepared a test. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. They have prepared a little book here. This is kindergarten and first grade in a multi-age classroom. They have a little book they called Fact or Fib. Okay, here comes your first question. Seals have little holes for ears. Is that a fact or is it a fib?
That is a fact.
Awesome. Right on. They agree. Cheetahs have heart-shaped dots. Is that a fact or is it a fib?
I believe that is a fib.
Right on. Cheetahs have egg-shaped dots.
There you go.
Okay. One more. Frogs have bumpy skin. Is that a fact or is it a fib?
Was that a frog, did you say?
A frog. Mm-hmm.
Frog have bumpy. I'm going to say that is a fact.
That actually is a fib because frogs have smooth skin and tadpoles have the bumps. That was a gift to you from kindergarten first grade students in Ohio and an example of what really little kids can do.
So basically they got 100 and I got a 66.
But, it's joyful. It's joyful, and that's what's important.
That's great. I have to ask, Linda, you're from Oregon. Why were you in Ohio? What was doing in Ohio?
Oh, I was working with a school district there where I've been going for a long time, and they're very committed to nonfiction literacy.
So besides authoring, you also consult the school districts, et cetera?
I do.
That's good to know. That's when I said that you were a staff developer, that would be that, right?
Yes. Exactly.
So people need to know that they can reach you via lindahoyt.com, correct?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure of that. Where else did you go, all over the country?
Yes, I do.
Wow, what fun. What fun.
Well, it's really
exciting
to see.
Don't come here this weekend.
I'll wait till the snowstorm passes.
Oh, my my goodness. It's absolutely unbelievable. One other thing before we leave, Linda, I want to ask you, it's a question I skipped over before, but what about a visual literacy? Okay, how does that impact what you're promoting, which is nonfiction writing?
Yeah, it's a really important part. Visual literacy is the notion that with nonfiction, we pick up a lot of the content by looking at high-quality photographs, by looking at tables, labeled diagrams, charts. All of those information-carrying sources aren't dependent on words. They're using visuals to communicate information. And in addition to that, we've got the nonfiction text features that are going to be coming up as visual literacy as well. Things like headings, captions, bold words, labeled diagrams, cross sections, all of those kinds of things give you more information as a reader. But what we want to do, and we really emphasize this in Explorations in Nonfiction Writing, the project I've done with Tony Stead, is that when kids sit down to do a piece of nonfiction writing, they've got to have great facts, they've got to have great sentences, but they also need great visuals. So we expect even little kids to have a great visual to go with their picture or with their text, so a labeled diagram perhaps. They're going to have bold-faced words. They're going to have headings. They're going to have all the supports that a reader needs to really understand their content.
Oh, that's good. That's good to know. I have to ask you, Tony, your co-author of your new project, he's from Melbourne, right? Melbourne, Australia?
He is from Melbourne, yes, and he comes to the United States.
Is he there now? Is that where he lives?
He lives in Melbourne. That is his primary residence, but he comes to the United States four times a year and then works on projects here.
Well, he must be then, the reason I'm asking it, the Australian education system, they too must be very interested in the nonfiction side.
Absolutely, as is Canada. There's a grand interest and has been for many, many years in Canada and Australia in nonfiction literacy.
Oh, that's interesting. I just had yesterday on the show Robert Martellacci, who runs Mindshare Learning. It's the big Canadian ed tech operation up there.
Oh, okay.
We were talking about Canadian education. If you want, I'll introduce you to him.
Okay, that'd be lovely.
Okay, but so basically, and is this worldwide now, do you see it, or is it just basically U.S., Canada, Australia?
You know, there are others who could speak more effectively to that. The countries that I'm familiar with are the United States, Canada, and Australia, as you just said. Those are the three that I know more about.
Okay, and you know, and just in light of that, as we wind down, the the Common Cores make it easy to move among 50 states, et cetera, et cetera. And pretty soon, okay, because the world is such a mobile place, we're going to have a worldwide Common Core, so that people could move from here to Spain or to Israel or Kenya or Russia or Brazil and be assured that when they go into fifth grade, they're going to have the same stuff. It's going to be tough. It's all new
well,
world.
Well, at least in terms of strategies. We may not want to have them all studying the history of the United States. They may want to have their own historical focus points. But in terms of strategy, you bet. We want everybody to be competent and successful as readers and writers of nonfiction.
Well, this is absolutely fascinating. Linda, you are a terrific guest. I really enjoyed having you on the show today.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate being invited.
Well, it was just wonderful. Please, I hope you come back. I'll make sure before I leave today, everybody has all your information. And by the way, the show will be archived over on our site, which is education-talkradio.org. Please go over there, listen to any shows, Linda, and please, we'll stay in touch. You'll come back.
All right. Thank you so much, Larry. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Linda Hoyt. Well, that was great. Okay? Teacher, staff developer, curriculum specialist, and author. Like I say, author in her spare time. Okay? She's a wonderful author, many, many books. Heinemann Publishing is her publisher. They're based. She's from Bend, Oregon, beautiful place. They're in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, an equally beautiful place. You can learn more about Linda's books at Heinemann.com. H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N, Heinemann.com. And if you want to, you go to Linda Hoyt, L-I-N-D-A-H-O-Y-T, LindaHoyt.com. What a fascinating, fascinating piece of education, writing and crafting nonfiction and how that fits into the Common Core State Standards. Wow, just great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Charles, at Heinemann for introducing me to Linda. Linda, thanks for taking time out of your busy day in such a beautiful place to come and visit with us. We're done for the week. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We had great shows this week. We're going to archive this show. You can listen to it forever over at www.education-talkradio.org. We'll have it there very shortly. Please come with us next week. We have a great show. We have a great series of shows, I should say. We have the School Boards Association. We have the State Directors of Technical and Career Education. We have a visit from Dr. Sarah Moore of ETA Cuisinaire. We have ASCD coming on with the Whole Child Initiative. We have the American the Association for Mid-Level Education coming on. And we also have my good friends from SIIA, the Software and Information Industry Association. And it's going to be a great week. And this was a great week. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Charles at Heinemann, for introducing me to Linda. This is Larry Jacobs, Education Talk Radio. We'll see you again. Be good. Bye-bye.